legitimately likes. Anyway, like, the thing about Russ, the one thing I've not wanted to push back on, because I think it's absolutely possible, Russ has a well-earned reputation for having, like, his own sort of media engine and wanting to control the narrative and everything else. But, like, don't you think that that is dissolved, like, any kind of facade of I can play by all of these videos that we are actually allowed to watch of him at practice, where it is very clear he cannot do even close physically to what the other two guys are doing ahead of him on the depth chart? Like, today it was out. Did you see it again today?
Same stuff.
Fields going through normally. Kyle Allen, again, closer to, like, full go. Like, it looked like slightly more intense drills. And there's Rush just not really doing a lot. So let's say that doesn't change because calf injuries can linger for even the most well-conditioned players whose place on the field requires them to be more athletic than Russ. Think Christian McCaffrey, for example. If more practices keep wearing on here and going by and Russ doesn't look like he's capable of doing anything, like, let's say it goes into next week and he still looks like this, how can he get his people leaking things out there that are going to put the pressure on Mike Tomlin if the actual video shows otherwise?
And I would say back to him, if I worked for him, Russ,
like, you got to be healthy enough.
You know, your heart and your, you know, your, you have an attitude of you always play, you battle through it. If you try to battle and you don't play well, you're really screwed, dude. It's only September.
He's in a tough spot. He is in a very tough spot, though, I will concede. To your point you're making, like, if I were hearing that as Russell Wilson, you know what I would feel like? The walls are closing in on me. Because on one hand, I know I've got to play this year and play well if I want to score one more, like, pretty high up mega deal, like big money, maybe nine figures if you get a long enough deal from somebody. You know, you might get $120 million if you get back for half the season and play really well. Somebody might give you $40 million here.
I also think he wants to add to his legacy, man.
Sure.
He's not a slam dunk for the Hall of Fame right now.
He's talking about wanting to play 21 games. He's, for whatever reason, he loves to talk and think big. Fine. But I would feel like the walls are closing in. I got to play if I want to get a new contract. I want to add to my legacy. I got to play. I got to be out there. But wait, here's the other problem. From the other side of the room, that wall's closing in. I'm not healthy. Don't you think he's had, as much as he clearly believes in himself, anybody would in that position, don't you think this calf injury for a guy who had a reputation of rarely missing games or even practices has to feel like, you've said it a lot with him, football mortality closing in? In his private thoughts, he has to have done some soul-searching about, like, what if this doesn't really heal quickly at all? What if I'm fully 36 years old and feeling every bit of it?
So he's been an NFL quarterback since 2012. He started playing right away. He got the Seahawks to the playoffs in his rookie year. That's 2012, so that is now more than a decade. He's been in the league for 13 years. This will be, I think, the first time he's missed three games in a season. He's going to sit out on Sunday. He's missed two. I don't think he's ever, other than the benching last year, I don't think he's ever even sat out back-to-back games with an injury. And now it's going to be three in a row. So when that happens for the first time and you're close to the end, I mean, no one really wanted you in free agency, only a couple teams, and there wasn't tons of interest. It was the Steelers, the Giants, maybe one other team. A team's paying you almost $40 million to not be there, and now you're hurt and you can't play, like, yeah, you got to start to – I would question myself, and I would have concerns, and I would have reasons to wonder if I could still play at a high level because now my body's betraying me. Russell Wilson did talk to Kamali Hathorn and others a few minutes ago. Donnie has that audio. Let's eavesdrop on Russ. If we hear anything interesting, we'll pipe back in and tell you what we think.
How much more you've been able to do this week, and where do you feel you are?
Yeah, I'm definitely gaining ground. I feel good. I was able to do a lot more work today, yesterday, so getting better every day.
Do you feel like you're being even more cautious with the calf, just knowing last time felt like you were close to coming back, and then you have that setback?
Yeah, we're just trying to be smart. I'm listening to the doctors, and we're all working together just to make sure that I'm ready to go fully and get back out there soon.
Medically right now, Russ, are you on board with this prognosis and diagnosis? Are you feeling like this is right for you right now to keep waiting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing everything I can, you know, physically every day, every morning, every night, just to make sure that I can be ready to go. And, you know, we'll know when I'm ready. and I'm getting close.
How are you? How do you show progress? Is it like a matter of the muscle itself loosening up, or are you tracking it too?
We have a whole plan. You know, we're following the plan. I don't want to get into details of the plan, but we're following that, and I think I got a lot of work to end today, which was great. So that was a really good thing.
Was it disappointing at all to go back to Denver and not get a chance to play?
No, what was exciting more than anything else was us winning, finding a way to win the game. You know, it was a good game. Obviously, we pulled through. I think the most important thing, too, was just seeing us rally together. That was really cool. And, you know, also, I think it was cool to see some of my, you know, former teammates and some of my closest friends in the world, obviously guys like Cortland Sutton. He means the world to me. Guys like Garrett Bowles, Julie McLaughlin, other guys as well, you know. So Javonte Williams, you know. So I just think that it was cool to see some people that I obviously have built some amazing, cool relationships, guys like Ray Jackson and many more.
Stop it for a second here, Donnie. Stop it here. We'll get to the petty game ball thing in a second that Tomlin brought the hot dog analogy up with. That's going to be the next question. He is so everything's so sanitized and run through a filter with him. He is Mr. PC. He leads the league in political correctness whenever he talks.
He's the anti-Ben in that regard, as far as
really
like
is.
He just will not spill any tea whatsoever.
But he's going back to the trying to be smart thing. He's still talking about how there is a broader, bigger picture in play. So I think he's pivoted from maybe initially thinking he could get right back out there to now not wanting to risk it all by rushing and doing something stupid. I do detect, though, that what Dulac said about how after this game, back in time for the Colts, that he's probably got that date circled. And if it starts to, if that doesn't happen, then I'll want to listen to him after that game to see if he's still, or once that decision gets made, let's see if he still is so gung-ho on the plan that they have in front of him. Because if he puts together 3 minus 17, if he puts 14 games, if he puts together 10 games that are good on tape, I think he'll get a job next year.
Yeah, he will.
There's still enough games. What I'm saying is there's still enough time in games for him to recapture what he did in Seattle to get himself a new contract. And I think he's obviously business savvy enough and smart enough to know that. And that's why I think, like, he's not going to fall for the bait there of bringing up the Denver game and the revenge and the everything else and, like, give you some kind of, like, crappy
answer. I think all that's probably true. I guess the thing I took away from that was the very first thing. He is – I think there is a very clear – dichotomy between how he's talking about his injury and what his practice status says. Getting better every day, all this stuff. It doesn't look like it. I want to keep going back. He is trying to, I think, not control the narrative because it's out there now. He's the third quarterback again. Kyle Allen is going after Fields and all these reps. So we know where Russ stands in that regard. He is, I think, really trying to make sure everybody knows he feels like he's getting better. But nothing about what he's doing at practice or how they are reporting his practice participation suggests that that's actually the case.
So we hear this with baseball all the time. The guys make strides, but they're not cleared for quote-unquote baseball activities is the term that gets thrown around. It is possible that he's making progress in whatever rehab he's doing when he's not on the field, and they're still holding him back when it comes to the field. But that would speak to just how injured he was at the beginning of this. Like, they have tried to poo-poo and downplay just how bad this calf strain was, really going all the way back to
I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I really thought they were slow rolling it because a lot of people reported that they thought
soft
they were slow.
Soft tissue injuries with guys in their 30s just freak me out. They just do. I don't think they're easy to get over, and I think even though none of us are supreme athletes like Russell Wilson –
although, I mean, you continue
there.
To try to track towards that, Pony.
Yes, of course. Let's hear the petty ball answer here with Russ Donnie.
After a game?
Yeah, I think so.
Are there things that just...
I didn't want to really talk about it. He's taking the Tomlin cue on that. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service. Your heart care matters. Get your heart checked at UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute today. for the first 2 weeks of the season, when it comes to the debate and discussion about Steelers games, it's really been all about our guys, Justin Fields versus Russell Wilson, and Fields playing because Russell Wilson isn't healthy. I think it shifts for this game because by now we all assume Fields will play, and there's not huge concern or consternation over Fields because of what he's done in these first two games. Conversely, you've got the Chargers and their quarterback dilemma, which is Justin Herbert got injured in the game against Carolina. His ankle got rolled up on. No practice yesterday. Now they're describing it as a limited practice. And for those who were in attendance who are trying to skate around the NFL practice rules, it doesn't look like he did a ton today.
Looks like he was a Russell Wilson level of limited participant.
Yes. So that is why we're bringing on our next guest, Steve Palazzolo from the 33rd team, to join us. Steve, if Justin Herbert doesn't play on Sunday, can the Chargers score more than 10 points against the Steelers defense?
Probably not. I don't have a ton of faith in that. I think Easton Stick is still the backup. I know they have Taylor Heinicke on the roster. I think Heinicke would have a better chance to do that. He's got a little bit more of a, I would say, upside compared to Easton Stick. But Chargers have been interesting. I mean, they've played Jim Harbaugh football. They run the ball really well. That would be their best. Their best bet with Harbaugh or without is getting some more big plays by J.K. Dobbins, who's looked fantastic for the first couple of weeks. They've been really good up front. I mean, it's like they've immediately morphed into a Jim Harbaugh team. Tough run blocking, you know, stout up front, run first attack, and then defensively, again, it's only 2 weeks, but this is the best defensive front the Chargers have had in years as far as physicality, playing the run. They've been pretty good on the back end. It is interesting how quickly they've morphed into what I think Jim Harbaugh loves about football.
Fill in the blank with a number here. First team to blank wins in Steelers-Chargers.
13 again. We'll say 13.
Steve,
the magic number.
It's got the lowest total of any game this week. It's 35.5, Malzi.
Well, it should be like an Iowa game, really, in college football, where you can't set the total low enough, I feel like. Steve, on to more pressing matters that actually involves kind of these two teams, because I think they're doing one of the few things that's an antidote to this. Do you agree with Mel Kiper that we should ban the two-high safety look? Because apparently nobody knows how to beat it. What's going on with that in the NFL? Why have these quarterbacks across the league all struggled so much?
So first of all, I don't know what's happening at ESPN. Like, we all have data and information. Mina Kimes, who's a friend, you know, been on our show before, she posted a number last week that said two high looks are at like 60% or something. And I'm not trying to call her out or anything. I don't see those numbers necessarily. So I don't know if Mel's being fed those numbers that like 60% of plays have two high safeties. But I will say generally, you're getting more deeper safeties. You have the NFL trying to avoid defensively giving up explosive plays. You are seeing that. I mean, the antidote is run the ball more effectively and you know, hit your quick passes and create after the catch. So, I mean, there are answers to this thing. It's the other part of it, too, I think, is defenses are getting better at disguising pressures. You saw Sunday Night Football how difficult it was for Caleb Williams and the Bears to just pick up a blitz and protect Caleb Williams. You see that across the league in a few other places. So you've got this Ravens, you got the Ravens. It's kind of like this combination of Fangio schemes that play deeper safeties, don't give up explosives, and Ravens schemes that do a really nice job of creating blitz packages and, you know, disguising it and sending 4 and 5, but still having coverage. I think you're just seeing a blend of all those things around the league, and it's just going to take quarterbacks who are patient, read it out, hit open receivers when they're open, and, you know, create after the catch.
I would tell anybody at ESPN, turn on Steelers Chargers Sunday and see how deep those safeties are. I'm guessing they'll be close
right
to the
behind
line
the linebackers.
Exactly. Steve,
then there's some teams that just can't pass, yes, and they're still getting the box stacked against them.
Yes. After week one, you said pretty much complimentary things of Justin Fields. Want to amend that at all after watching him against Denver on Sunday?
Not really. I think it's about the same. I don't know how much he'll keep this going. I mean, again, it's if the Steelers had given up 14 points, is everybody completely upset with this offense? Is it just the fact that the offense, I mean, the defense is playing so well that it's working? I mean, I think Fields had another similar type of game managery type of game.
Do you expect him to play like what kind of improvement do you expect from him week to week? Like, how different do you expect it to look, or is it partly based on who their opponent is?
I mean, at some point, yeah. I mean, at some point, the other team's going to score more points, and you're going to have to, you know, push the ball down the field a little bit more, or at different times, or over the deep middle. Yeah, he's created some big plays, right? They've created some downfield passing opportunities. I think the only other changes are like the weeks where he might get 8 or 10 design runs, and some of those become, you know, big plays. Are there games where they'll rely on his legs a little bit more? He's already picked up like 6 first downs with his legs. I mean, that's valuable stuff for the offense. So, yeah, I mean, look, I always thought Fields was accurate at Ohio State. He was working from massive clean pockets, but he could get in there and chuck it. I'm still waiting for just like consistent, that 15 to 25 yard level, throwing the ball on time and accurately. If he could, you know, somehow improve that and be more consistent there, I think there's places to improve there that could open up the offense even more.
Steve, Broderick Jones has been benched here. So the Steelers' 14th overall pick from last year now finds himself as a swing tackle on the bench. We talked a lot about Jones going into that draft because he was on the Steelers' radar. What's your reaction to already the Steelers having a little bit of buyer's remorse and putting him on the bench for Dan Moore and Troy Fautanu?
He has a 43.6 PFF grade, if you're just wondering if the Steelers are matching, if their perception is matching the PFF grade. I felt like I was defending the PFF. I mean, I was with PFF last year, but I was defending the lower grades last year. Remember, the Steelers' run game was...
Yes, I was griping about it last year. Yes,
you were. We were fighting. We were arguing. You know, it was ugly. But I was trying to say, look, sometimes there are some bad blocks in there that don't show up, you know, in the actual production of the play, whether it's a, you know, quick loss in pass protection or a bad run block where the ball is run to the other side, or, you know, Jaylen Warren just juked to the defender or whatever it was. So, yeah, I think Broderick's kind of struggled a little bit last year and into this year. And Dan Moore is interesting because every time I try not to give up on offensive linemen after 3 or 4 years, because in years 3, 4, 5, they do tend to, you know, make some improvements, and maybe, you know, Dan Moore's done that and created some flexibility up front for the Steelers. Now, they haven't faced Myles Garrett yet. That's always trouble. But, you know, maybe there's some improvement there, and it gives Broderick a little bit of time to develop on the bench.
I mean, they got Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack on Sunday, Steve. It's not like they're going up against the Sisters of the Poor there, you know, so
I'm just saying Garrett tends to beat Dan Moore very, very quickly, and the ball's usually out, so Steelers fans never notice it. But,
oh. All right, so let me just one more here. On paper, if you take the quarterbacks out of it, because I know Herbert is better than Fields, if you take the quarterbacks out of it, are the Steelers a better team than the Chargers?
They're very similar if you think about it. I mean, the defenses both have a ton of potential there. I think the Chargers are finally playing up to the talent level that they have defensively. They both probably have questionable receiving cores, with, you know, George Pickens being the best receiver across both teams. I think it's pretty close as far as both teams go. Knowing my audience, though, I'll say the Steelers have the better squad, man for man, of course.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Palazzolo, Check the Mic, the 33rd team. His podcast with Sam Monson, it's very good. I listen all the time. Steve, thank you for joining us.
Yep, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
I forgot the Chargers have Heinicke. That honestly is a better option than Easton Stick.
You know why?
Heinicke went toe-to-toe
with Brady,
with Charlie's Buccaneers in the playoffs. Charlie's nodding yes.
You know why I'm
That's
willing?
The same nod you gave for the Amanda Pete Breast comment
Do you
earlier.
Know? Well, no. For that one, he was like, it, like a dog who had been presented with a treat in front of him, and he was...
And then he went and watched that video. Well, see? Don't act like you didn't.
Well, I searched. I did. Amanda Pete. Not, what is it called? The whole nine yards?
Did you do it on a company internet service?
No, LTE.
Oh, okay.
LTE. And it was right there. She's firing a gun.
Donnie, have you gone back and looked at it?
I have not, no. Probably not the best thing to do while I'm in the office.
How about one John Football?
Oh, I mean, he's a veteran of that kind of thing, so I'm sure he was already well aware.
All right.
Oh, mercy.
What do you think are the odds Herbert plays right now? I think 60-40, yes.
I was going to say the opposite, 40-60.
No?
Yeah, like 60-40, no. But then again, who am I? No, he's like Sayamalu gets talked about here. Like, he could practice Friday and he's good. I mean, he could pretty much say, I'm good to go on Saturday, and they'd play him. By the way, you know why I would think they wouldn't play Heinicke over Stick? It's the same reason. It's like the same basic operating principle Tomlin has. Heinicke is a volatile player. He will put the ball at risk if you give him an opportunity to do so in the name of trying to make a play.
What the hell's Easton Stick, Mulsey? Charlie Batch is a backup quarterback.
I think it is much more likely that Harbaugh would be very comfortable telling Easton Stick, you are going to hand the ball off to various running backs 45 to 50 times in this game, okay? And you are going to maybe attempt 17 passes, fewer if we're in the lead. And he would feel better about Easton Stick being almost too scared to screw up. Where you put Heinicke in that game, there's absolutely a chance Taylor Heinicke goes, ah, screw it, I'm chucking it.
Stick numbers aren't terrible from last year. He went 0-4, three touchdowns, no interceptions, averaged 225 passing yards a game, 51 QBR, their backup quarterback quality, except the Chargers lost every single one of the games. All right.
He looks kind of like a weird store brand John Cena, too. Very odd.
He follows me on Twitter.
Cena?
Yeah.
He's one of those people who follows like almost a million.
Yeah, I can't even brag
people.
About it. Make clogged gutters a thing of the past with Gutter Helmet. Call 888-5-HELMET today. That music means it's time for Donnie's segment. It's called the Donnie Football Debrief, and that is sponsored by Steel Mill Saloon in Mount Washington. Don?
The Debrief, September 19, 2024. Chris, you asked Steve Palazzolo a question about it. I did want to get into this a little bit more. Everyone's favorite draft Nick, Mel Kiper Jr. today, saying that two high safeties, quote, should be outlawed, suggesting that it is ruining the NFL and its product.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now about two high safeties. Oh, what it does is it forces teams to run the football, and because you don't have a lot of offensive line practice at the college level, and then, of course, the pros are taking away their practices, they're not hitting as much, these guardian caps might change things, not getting a lot of cohesion on the offensive line. That leads to quarterbacks ill-prepared to enter the NFL because they're making easy throws in college. One-read offenses. We need more scoring. ESPN has told me that I need to send a subtle message to the NFL to start changing the rules to favor offense. There, it's best
it's
I got.
2 days in a row Kuiper's came out and gone viral. His stuff
you
about
think it's
Bryce Young.
Do you think it's wholly unbelievable, though, what I just said sort of in like jest, semi-jest? Do you think it would really be beyond the pale for ESPN to subtly tell their people, like, can you start ripping the product quality here because we're a partner with the NFL, we don't love the way these games look, we have Monday Night Football, it's a big deal to us, and can you please, like, put out some credible-sounding gobbledygook about, you know, why tactically this is bad?
I could see in a production meeting, Kiper like half jokingly saying that they should outlaw it, and the producer being like, "Ooh, that's
Eureka!"
Say that on the air.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that like it's something that also ESPN is acutely aware of, though, like whether or not people think that these games are compelling.
I hate, you know, even the shift in baseball. I hate rules like that.
Like you're not allowed to play defense this way.
Yeah, like. Make an adjustment to the way that the team is defending you. If they want to put all of their infielders on the right side, hit it to the left side or try to. Make adjustments.
Well, the solution here is like the solution here is hammer teams with the running game until they finally bring a safety down into the box to stop you from doing that because the numbers game looks better for them, and then throw it to beat them after they do that. That's the solution.
Arthur Smith, believe it or not, Donnie, was asked about these Mel Kiper Jr. comments today. This is labeled for you back in Greentree, worth the rivers, why QB play is down from Arthur Smith. And he actually did indulge this crazy Mel Kiper Jr., man who eats pumpkin pie every day, lover of the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I did know that he was a huge Ravens
annoys
fan.
Me about him. although I do have a soft spot because he is the godfather of draft coverage, and I do love the draft. Here is Arthur Smith on this Kuiper asinine take.
I think what you're seeing is there's a trend right in the 2010s. There was some really good veteran quarterback play around the league. Everybody saw it here with Ben. Now you're getting so much shell coverage where people are putting an umbrella over it. And if you've got a great rush team, they're trying to get you to hold the ball if you get greedy. And you got a lot of young quarterbacks. And a lot of guys, and they got to play earlier. They're used to playing horizontal games. So some of it's dictated by the defenses. There's a lot going on there. So that would be my best answer I can give you. But again, that's just my opinion.
First of all, it is refreshing that we have now someone who is not afraid to give an opinion as Steelers offensive coordinator.
I know what his answer would have been. I don't know. I haven't seen, really, if there's... Matt had
trying to score points and win games. He would have said something stupid.
Matt
like
had
that.
Like a tonal similarity to Jamie Dixon, where Jamie was perpetually on the defensive. His team could have won by 60, and he would be like, I don't know. Canada would have said something like, I don't know. We're talking about the too high. I'm just ultimately trying to get guys open, and obviously we want Kenny to attack when he has a chance to attack.
He did throw some interesting stuff out there, though. The veteran quarterbacks, the Mannings, the Bradys, the Bens are gone. And that the young quarterbacks are in college, we saw this with Canada's offense actually, the game is played more east-west than north-south, so not only do you have defenses wanting teams to throw the ball shorter and not intermediate and deep, but also guys are more accustomed to
and
doing
offenses
that.
Are more willing to do it in college because if you're a really good team, you can throw the ball to a playmaker and he's probably going to make the guy miss if the guy across from him is not an NFL player to be. In the NFL, as you know, they're all NFL players, and it's much easier or more likely that those guys will get tackled in space. I got to be honest, my major thought about this shift so far through 2 weeks where quarterback numbers are way down, touchdown passes are way, way down, this should play right into what Mike Tomlin wants.
I know.
This has to be a dream come true for him. You want to run the ball. You want to play defense. You feel like your defense is better than almost everyone else's in the league. This is what you want to do. Go for it. He has to love these rock fights. Don't the Steelers and Chargers actually have the biggest expenditure on defense of any two teams in the league?
Yes.
I think we are watching a battle this weekend of the two highest paid defenses in the league, too. This is right up Mike Tomlin's alley. This is what is happening so far in the NFL, and I don't think it'll stick for a variety of reasons. I think the league will, at the bare minimum, tell the officials to call fewer penalties on offenses to sustain drives. This is football as he wants to coach it and as he would prefer it be played. He feels like, I'm positive of this, if more games were like the ones he's played so far, very few other teams are going to beat him. And I think, by the way, all of this too high stuff is, as it always is in any sport,
cyclical.
It is cyclical, although the running game really is coming back because even all these analytics people who are your EPA per play is almost always better with a pass are now saying run the ball. I do think, though, it's usually a reaction to one player doing something at a spectacular level. This is all Mahomes driven. He has been so good and has strafed teams with the terrifying over-the-top offense that they tried last year, even though it didn't work, they tried to slow him down and dare him to put together 12-play drives.
I think it's dumb, though, to run an offense when you play Patrick Mahomes and do it that way and then say we're going to use the same offense, the same defense against Bo Nix. When those two quarterbacks...
You should be attacking Bo Nix.
Right. So, from the Steelers' standpoint on this whole NFL evolution, I think Tomlin's got to be three things here offensively with this shift and him trying to take advantage of it. Number one, more reason in his mind to play Dan Moore. The numbers back it up. We went over
He's him. A run-blocking left tackle.
The numbers say he is a good run-blocking left tackle. Horrible pass blocker, very good run blocker. It's more efficient, more effective right now to run the ball than it has been in years. That's one. Two, he's got to be licking his chops to get Sayamalu back. Because their line right now is not good without him. You take Anderson out, you put your best guard in, going to do even better at that. And then three, more reason to play Justin Fields even when Russell Wilson's healthy.
He runs the ball. He's another guy, numbers game, that can give you that advantage. Yeah, The trend line right now works in their favor. It's finally, that pendulum has finally swung back in a direction I think they are very comfortable with.
Donnie, you want a final thought on this?
Well,
it is your debrief after all.
Yeah, I mean, I was waiting to make the point of maybe that's why we may see this be Justin Fields' job, you know, already locked up. Like, it's his job to lose because he does certainly display a better aspect on the ground than what Russell Wilson can do. And, I mean, Russell Wilson could run 5 to 10 years ago, but not anymore. And Fields, elite with his legs. I mean, I think you guys hit all the boxes there. You checked all the boxes. This is working out perfectly for how the Steelers want to play football. Mike Tomlin has to be a pig in slop.
Do we think Kuiper is
a pig in slop?
Absolutely. I agree with that. Does Kuiper even know that he's getting crushed for this take? Is he even aware of
no,
it?
No way. He still has an answering machine.
Yeah, that's got to be bliss right there. He puts this take out into the ether. There have been countless tweets sent about it, segments on other shows like this one, like centered around reacting to what he had to say, referencing it, and he just fires that take off, and that's all he knows
of it.
I think
he said he still uses a fax machine.
Incredible. honestly, man, I'm super jealous of that.
Really?
Yes. There's something, I think, very comforting about the idea that the guy, A, is good enough at his job and well-respected enough that he can still get away with that.
I love technology.
Sure, there are a lot of things that it's made easier, but if you're Mel Kiper, you've never been forced to move on into a new era of that. You get to live your life the way you've always
lived
it.
Why would you want a flip phone when I can have a phone that allows for me
Twitter's
to look
just
up
like,
any statistic I want or watch any
You don't
game
need to look up statistics. You know them all. Twitter also is just like beaming sometimes the worst things in the world directly into your brain. You're staring. How many times do you catch yourself every day staring blankly at your phone, maybe when like Stella's gone to bed, just thumbing through a timeline or just like absent-mindedly just like consuming all sorts of like mental popcorn and drivel.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.